Several years ago, our guest speaker traveled to the small community airport in Hartford, Connecticut for a 6 a.m. meeting with someone he had never met before. And our speaker described himself as Chinese American, 5'7", wearing gold-rimmed glasses, a blue suit, and carrying a black attaché case. So he arrived at the airport at 5:45, and the terminal was empty that time of morning, and the question of the connection seemed so irrelevant. That is, until 5:58, when a bus pulled up and Greyhound unloaded 45 Japanese businessmen, you can guess it, every single one dressed in a blue suit, wearing gold-rimmed glasses, and carrying a black attaché case. But apparent obstacles did not control this situation, and it all worked out, just as things in his life have all worked out. His first job was writing for the Wall Street Journal, despite the fact that he had a liberal arts degree and hadn't even written for his college newspaper. And reading his resume, you would find about his success on Wall Street and then investment banking, and that's just the first few lines. Those close to him describe a great friend, a loving father, and a supportive partner. He's been an ordained minister for 10 years, and he is the assistant minister of the Fort Lauderdale Center for Spiritual Living. I'm just going to say, please welcome my friend, Ernie Chu.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure to be here. I was at your summer, I think it was summer or fall retreat about 2 years ago. It was fabulous, and I got to know many of you here. It almost feels when I come here that I know as many people as I know in my home church, and I've been gone for so long, actually, doing the book tour, the Soul Currency book tour, that when I started to speak on February, they billed me as a guest speaker, even though... But I'm glad to be here, and in fact, there's probably no mistaking me from, at least we don't have any Japanese businessmen here today, but it's kind of interesting, I do have a confession to make. When I went to the ministers' conferences, especially the United Ministers' conferences, where I don't know anybody, it was a great experience because I had 75 or 100 ministers, and I'd walk into a room, and most of them would remember me because I was basically the only Asian American, but only Chinese American in virtually all of New Thought. But when I started going through, after a while, meeting all these people, I started to get a little confused myself because they all start to look the same. And well, this is the town of CNN, and I know that in especially down in Florida, many of my congregants listen to it, and they tell me that basically, if you want to have a quick way to get depressed in the morning, you turn CNN on in about 5 minutes, you listen to the economy, and you get depressed. And I said, well, what do you expect? You know, it's called cable news network, but CNN really stands for constantly negative news. And so we listen to everything and read the paper, and we listen to our president, and we learn that things are getting better and or that we have to wait a while before they're going to get worse, before they get better. It seems like everything, there's new material every day. But you see, one of the things that I'm going to talk about today is really the science of mind in any economy, and that includes right now and right here. Now, let me tell you a little bit about how I got to be a minister from Wall Street, because that was one of the first questions people said. Well, you know, you've been on Wall Street, you were a member of the New York Stock Exchange when you were 25 years old. You basically were involved in a number of companies. And I told them, I said, yes, that's absolutely true. But one of the things that I learned was that even though I did 9 companies, one of them was probably the biggest success I had, and that was the one that was a total failure. And that was the one that basically left me $1 million personally in debt. And while I won't really go into all the details of it, it was one of these things that I talk about in my book, where I literally woke up one morning and found out that the person that I was in business with had another Social Security number, had really their whole background was a fabrication. And of course, we were in that process going for major financing, and the financing disappeared because it was the investors that found that information out. And so all of a sudden, I found myself $1 million in debt and not sure exactly what I was going to do, except that if I was ever going to work on Wall Street again, I would have to not file for bankruptcy. So if you can imagine what $1 million in debt feels like, and I know that some of you might have credit cards of $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, and sometimes maybe even a mortgage payment of $1,000 that feels really, it feels like you've hit the bottom. But I'll tell you that $1 million in debt, if you then went out and got a job that paid you $150,000 a year, that a pretty good job? Yeah, pretty good job. And you could afford to, say, on top of all your monthly expenses, pay about $3,000 toward your debt. It would be about 200 years before you'd even notice there was a difference. Well, I didn't bother to make those calculations because I think that I was also very overwhelmed because I come from a Chinese background, Chinese American background, and there's this whole issue of shame. You know, fortunately, not being able to pay your bills and not being able to look people in the eye that you had either borrowed money from or whatever, and I'm sure some of you can relate to that. You know, it's a good thing I didn't come from a Japanese samurai family because I would have had to fawn. But in any case, what I really found was that I made my way to a church in Morristown, New Jersey. That's how I got started. And I sat in the back of the room. Now, nothing wrong with people sitting in the back of the room, but the people in Morristown, New Jersey that sat in the back of the room were people that didn't want to be seen, that were going through issues in their life. There was a lady on my right-hand side that basically was going through a horrendous divorce, losing her kids, and one of them was sick and basically had a terminal illness. And the other one that was sitting, another lady that sat next to me, was going through some chemotherapy. She had just had breast cancer and was having some issues about whether it was going to go away or not. And so as we sat there, one of them got really excited. I think it was the lady that was going through the divorce and said, we should take these classes, because the minister was talking about not only you should change your thinking, but if you really want to learn more about it, take a class. So I'm sitting there, of course, figuring I don't have any money to begin with, and I'm thinking, boy, this must be another way that the church gets money, is to do the classes. You know, I'm sitting, and of course, I didn't think that was particularly a big thing to take classes until one of them said, well, we're all going to take classes. It looks like we all need it, so I'll buy your book because I know you can't afford it. And it was like $31, and at that point, I was at the point where I could walk through a grocery store and not buy 99% of what I saw. Now, what could I buy, you ask, that 1%? And these were, at that time, they were introducing these packages of Japanese noodles, the ramen noodles. And they'd have specials on those. You know, sometimes 20 for a buck. So that's I lived on that. And of course, they've gone up a little bit in price these days. But that's how I managed to get through. And so I was sitting there finding some peace for my creditors, trying to figure out how I was going to really revamp my life, and wondering, you know, how could somebody that had a background like me end up sitting in the back row at Morristown, New Jersey, $1 million in debt, eating ramen noodles, and wondering, what am I going to do with my life? And so I went and I took classes because I had no other choice. I got dragged there kicking and screaming. And I like to sit in the back. And so what did my three friends who sat in the back do when they got to class? They sat on the front table right there and then, you know, and I had to really pay attention to what the teacher was saying. Some of you might know my teacher, Reverend Frankie Timmers. And Frankie was one of these people that was always very heart-centered and always it was very outrageous in some ways. And so she began teaching the class, and about half an hour into it, I began to realize that this thing really had something of value for my life. And so I decided I would begin to do treatment. So the first thing I did was to try to figure out how to do treatment because it felt very uncomfortable. The tendency is that when you're down and out and you finally decide you're going to turn the matter over to spirit, you don't really, you still have a tendency, if you've been brought up as I was in the United Church of Christ, to do negotiated prayer. You know, God, if you do this, I will never, you know, I will continue to do prayers all the time, and I'll, you know, the whole nine yards. But I began to find that I finally began to get comfortable with treatment. And later on, I discovered that most people who go into this teaching have this issue because it feels a little different and a little uncomfortable. But you know, the other thing that I found was that if you have any issues about yourself, about your own worthiness, and of course, when you're $1 million in debt, how could you not have any issues about yourself? You also have that hesitancy. You also have that difficulty of doing treatment because there's a tendency to want to say, God is out there, and I'm just going to turn everything over to God, and God's going to change things in my life. But there's kind of a dualistic way of looking at it because, in fact, God is in here. God starts in there. We're part of God. We are literally that expression to the extent that we realize it. So now when I began to do my treatments, I began to notice that I felt better. Not only that, but I began to notice that things started to flow a little better, and I thought that might be my imagination. But literally within about 9 months, I could see out, because at that time I didn't even have a job. So within about 4 days I had a job. Within 9 months I had a way to see that there was light at the end of the tunnel, and within 18 months I had the entire $1 million paid off. And by the way, you know what that meant? It meant I could start over. It was zero. So I made $1 million and got to zero. However, fortunately for me, the next 5 years were probably as good a 5 years as anybody as I had ever dreamed it would be. And so I've been there. You know, they say that, you know, most religions talk about hell, you know, as some place you go to. You know, religious science, we talk about, most religious scientists have already been to hell and have sort of come back and began to learn the teaching. And hell is really a state of mind. And when you go through a situation that like this, you realize that it's not just the economy. It's not just the fact you made a bad decision. It's really a wake-up call from spirit. And you see, anybody that's going through it right now really comes to a point where if they looked at their life, they would see that at some point in their life there had been previous little gentle knocks, reminders, even people who are friends just reminding them that, hey, listen, you're getting a little further and further into debt than you're comfortable. You sure you want to do this? You know, or other things such as relationships that break up. Because you see, abundance is not just simply about money. It's about everything. It's about the richness of life. And when I talk about soul currency, investing your inner wealth for fulfillment and abundance, you know, people who haven't read the book will say, oh, it's a book about prosperity. It's a book about money. It's about, you know, you got the money man there. But actually what it is really about a book about creating from wholeness. Because the soul's currency is love. And you might ask, well, what? How do you define love? I mean, how can love pay your bills? Well, a perfect example is, how many people watched the video that went on the internet of Susan Boyle? Wasn't that amazing? Wasn't that, you know, there were, you could not watch that and not feel your eyes tearing up. I mean, there's a real sense of connection because we all see that this is something that is very, very special, but yet we all have that within us. And this was an extreme example. Spirit occasionally brings to the fore these extreme examples of situations. Because 2 years ago, and I mentioned it in the book, Paul Potts, who was a sort of an overweight mobile phone salesman, got on the same show and he sang opera. And he's now touring with the three tenors. And so really what comes down to it is that within each of us, we've got these special gifts that we call them, special gifts. But you see, there's a disconnect. Because when we see that we have gifts, we think of the experience of having a gift. I'll give you an example. Think back 5 years. Can you think of three or four presents that you got for your birthday 5 years ago? Be tough, wouldn't it? Can you think of two? Maybe one? So what you can think of is that you had a good time, that you were surrounded by friends, that they gave you things from love. So you remember the experience of being honored. You remember the experience of being loved and being loved as yourself. But when it comes to really recognizing what's within you, when you talk about spiritual gifts that God gives you, our language doesn't allow us to connect with that. We only think of how we feel in church, and then when we look to find what I call weekday spirituality, there is a little bit of fear involved. We tend to forget this. So what I've done is I ended up having a nice career on Wall Street. I never got back into that situation. In fact, I basically had the most successful 5 to 6 years that I've ever had. And then I later became a minister because I began to understand that I had to really begin to teach what I learned from it. And so when you begin to instead call what I call your talents, what we've called your divine gifts, call them assets. That sound like it has some value to it? Of course. When you think of assets, you think of something that you write on a balance sheet, or you think that you can pledge to a bank, or you can count on your net worth or whatever. But you see, those particular assets are really valuable, and you might say, well, how does all these assets basically translate into being able to make more money so I can basically have a happier life or be able to have a more full life or at least not have to worry? And essentially, one of the things that you do is to really look at what's in front of you. And what's in front of you are things like the internet, YouTube clip of Susan Boyle, where you get to really see that here's a person that didn't appear to have a whole lot going for her. She wasn't terribly good looking. She lived with her mother. She didn't have a job. You could just go all the way down but you see, she did have a dream, and her dream was to sing in front of a large audience. Of course, she never thought that not only would Spirit grant that dream when she opened up to it, but that audience would probably be 1 billion people. It's a pretty big audience. And so there's probably at least, at this point, at least 200 to 300 million people that have already seen that clip. By the time she gets her record contract, she goes out on tour, and you know, people are going to remember her, because not because she's so good looking or so ugly, but because she's different. And you see, all of us are different. And that's what allows us to really be able to create things that are so reflective of our gifts. So as an example, you know, you have an inner economy here, because if you're waiting, for example, for the economy to get better before you make your decisions, if you're waiting for somebody to tell you that you're valuable without really having decided within yourself that you are, if you're looking for someone outside of you to love you when you really don't have any self-esteem of your own? You know, I got news for you. The Calvary's not coming. You have to really begin to start to look at things in your own way. And so what I would say is, yeah, we've all heard of the financial stimulus package. All that is really is basically a rebate on your future taxes. But, you know, we think that that's kind of like, oh, that's nice. But you think about it, once you get the check, it's probably all spent at least three times over. The real financial stimulus package, I'm looking at them. You are your own financial stimulus package. And if you can't really begin to accept that, if you're constantly looking outside of yourself for something to bail you out, you're going to be waiting a long time. And you're always going to be putting some commentary with your friends about how things aren't changing, it's taking so long, the economy is very difficult. In Soul Currency, we talk about the idea of counterfeit currency. Now, counterfeit currency is, as you all know, it's something where all these people print out these phony dollar bills, whether it's the Russian mafia or whatever it is that does that, and they pass it all out, and basically, if they can get away with it, they basically dupe all these people into giving them real money. But you see, what is real money? Real money is nothing more than agreements and symbols. And that's what you have to begin to understand, is that your soul's currency is real, and that basically creates all the currency, including, quote, real money. Now, back to counterfeit currency. Counterfeit currency is also your beliefs and your lack of lack and limitation, of struggle, of not feeling good enough. And you see, some of this you don't really believe in, because if you did, for an example, if there was somebody that looked a lot like you and started going around to all your friends, your family, your neighbors, maybe even people you don't know, and started telling them about how you had such self-esteem issues, how you didn't think this was good or that, or some of the things that you say to people, you would look at them and say, why are you doing this to me? Why do you hate me this way? Why are you going around to all these people and publicizing this? But you see, it's you that's doing that. And you're not even aware of it. And you see, that when you begin to let go of the counterfeit currency, because you see, enlightenment, or really wholeness, is a matter of subtraction, not addition. It doesn't mean you should necessarily go out and take another workshop, read another book. But only, you don't need to know more. What you may need to do is to remind yourself of what you already are. And so that's really the most important part of when you start to look at the economy and any out there. You need to really look at what's in here. What's the economy in here? The economy in here is doing well. Now, if you want to talk about what fear is, this is the new anacronym. You know, all the way that we learned about fear was saying false expectations appearing real. Anybody remember that? Yeah, okay. Got a new one for you. Fear is failing economy appearing real. And what you need to understand is when you start hearing terms like fear, the economy is not doing well, depression, recession, GDP is down, start to use spiritual terms to really understand that the inner economy has nothing to do. It is a prospering economy that has opportunity and possibility for each of you. And so when you hear GDP is down and flat and going there, you know, I don't even look at that now. I have a different name for it. Instead of calling it gross domestic product, I call it God-directed prosperity. And that's what you should do too. When you begin to look at your checkbook, cut those ties, because what's happening on your checkbook is it's wrapped around with a chain that says fear on the other end. So visually see yourself taking the biggest pair of bolt cutters and cutting that loose. So now as you begin to look at your own soul currency, understand that it is flowing through you. There's always been opportunity. If you are going through a difficult time, just understand, or have lost your job, understand that it all changes with one phone call. One phone call. So envision what that phone call might look like. Envision what that might feel like. And if you're just looking to just increase your consciousness of prosperity, understand that when you focus on prosperity, you're walking through the same door as deepening your relationship with God. Because essentially what you're doing is you're creating from wholeness. And soul currency is the most powerful way that you can create from wholeness. And this afternoon and out, I guess after the service, I'll be signing books. I would recommend that you might, this is a new way of looking at it. And I look forward to seeing you outside or at the service, at the next service, or even at the workshop. And I thank you very much for inviting me here to speak a little bit about my favorite topic. Thank you.
Stand up. Can you see why we brought him here?